Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to this week's Living Torah. And for those of you in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving again. Of course, it's Wednesday as I'm recording, so it's not actually Thanksgiving right now. But by the time you see this, Thanksgiving, yeah, it gets confusing to me every week. But in the midst of that, happy Hanukkah to everyone. And this is one of my favorite times. And of course, this year, as always, I received emails from all kinds of places with things about Hanukkah and that we should not be observing Hanukkah. And it's just another Christmas. It's a Christmas alternative. And, you know, I have to totally and completely disagree with that kind of knee-jerk reaction is the only way that I can put it. For people who really don't understand what Hanukkah is all about, the festival of dedication. And it is clear that it's in the scriptures. Of course, it's not in Leviticus chapter 23 because the Maccabees did not live during the time of Moses. But it is clearly stated in the book of John, and I think also referred to in the book of Hebrews. And this time of Hanukkah, it can be, and for some, it is just another reason to go out and buy presents and all of these things. But if we look at the reason for Hanukkah, the true reason, you know, in John chapter 10, I believe it's verse 20, it says Yeshua was in Jerusalem, and it was the Feast of Dedication. Now, what other festival is in the winter? He was in Jerusalem, Feast of Dedication, that is Hanukkah. And I actually have had people that have said, well, of course he was there, but he was not observing it. Okay, well, I guess we can't prove that one way or another, but it is kind of interesting that he took that occasion to look right in the face of organized religion of that day and proclaim himself to be the true light. And so I think to say that he wasn't having anything to do with Hanukkah, no, he used Hanukkah as an opportunity to teach a message of dedication, which Hanukkah is all about. You know, as I got up this morning and I looked at my email and I thought Hanukkah was starting tomorrow night. It's actually tonight, Wednesday night, the 25th of Kislev. And it was kind of a, I'm running a little bit behind on this. And so I got up, we got our decoration. Yes, we actually decorate. Now, you can do that. You don't need to. You know, how we do something like this, what I believe is something biblical, is, you know, if you want to, people take the Christmas thing and say, well, it's not what I'm thinking about while I'm celebrating Christmas. It's not what I'm thinking about. Well, it's not my, I think that's the wrong question. It's not what we're thinking about, it's what is he thinking about. And so Hanukkah, I separate it totally and completely. I don't believe that it has anything to do with Christmas. And if you want to if somebody wants to make it into a Christmas alternative, well, that's their prerogative. You know, it's kind of ironic, actually, though, that without Hanukkah, there would be no Christmas. Think about it. Think about it. If there was not a Hanukkah, there would not be a modern day, as pagan as it is, there would not be a Christmas. There would not have been an Emperor Constantine. Well, there would have been an Emperor Constantine, but there would not have been a birth of a Messiah that he could mix the paganism of that day in with. So it is an ironic thing. But what I was getting back to is I've been thinking about today that 2,000 years ago, probably on this day, the 24th of Kislev, as I'm recording, there was a young lady, a young girl in the hills of Israel, in a little town called Nazareth, out of the way, placed in the middle of nowhere in that day. And maybe she was decorating her house or cleaning her house or doing something for a remembrance of Hanukkah. And it would be on that day, maybe the first, and we can't prove that, but I think it's pretty obvious from Scripture that Hanukkah Hanukkah is the conception, the day of the conception of Yeshua. And so she may have been going around and cleaning up the house or doing something for some kind of a celebration they would have had 2,000 years ago to commemorate these the heroes of the Maccabees. And it was on that day that the Ruach came up unto her, and she was she found herself pregnant, and it was the conception of the Messiah. You know, if it was not for Hanukkah, that young lady Miriam would not have been alive. Well, she may have been alive, but she would not have been observant like she was, because Antiochus Epiphanes, the one that is, you know, the villain of Hanukkah, Antiochus Epiphanes, is the one who wanted to assimilate and exterminate all of the tribes, all the tribe of Judah. And so he didn't get his way. And once again, the family of Elohim survived another attack, as has been the case through so many years. And so just the fact that she was there, and that it was because of Judah Maccabee, because of his family, because of the heroism. And these were not perfect men, of course, but there is because of them that we have the scriptures today. Because Antiochus Epiphanes, his desire was to annihilate, to assimilate the Jewish people. You know, the book of Matthew that we've been going through for 2.5 years now. In fact, if you look at Matthew through Revelation in the scripture, these books, this revelation would have never been, was it not for Judah Maccabee and his sons. Because there would be no person called Yeshua. There would have not been a Miriam and all of these. So the long story, the long kind of the truck route of this whole thing is, do I believe Hanukkah is something to celebrate? Absolutely. Should we make it into a Christmas alternative? Absolutely not. But let's not do this knee-jerk pendulum swing thing of just because it's, you know, celebrated by Jews, that makes it all bad, because it does not make it all bad. Now, one thing that's all bad today, or at least bad in one sense, is you've seen in the news this thing with Iran. Now, if you want here's the straight through the city, no truck route about it. If the President of the United States and John Kerry are involved in something, then I can guarantee you that it is not good. Well, it's good in a way, because it is prophecy coming to pass. Verse I read this morning, I've been thinking about this thing with Iran and all the news that's coming out about it. And one of my favorite parts is Psalm 2. It says, "Why are the nations in an uproar? The people grumbling in vain. The earth's kings are taking positions, leaders conspiring together against Israel." No. Against Bibi Netanyahu? No. It says they're conspiring together against Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh and his anointed. Okay, and we're going to see this in Matthew chapter 24. Perfect segue here to Matthew 24, the verses for this week, and in the midst of Hanukkah. They cry, "Let's break their fetters, let's throw off their chains. He who sits in heaven laughs. Yahweh looks at them in derision. Then in his anger he rebukes them, terrifies them in his fury. I myself have installed my king on Zion, my holy mountain." You know, it says, "I have installed my king." Yeshua, the Messiah, is already the king. We're just looking for the manifestation of it. Just as the same as 2,000 years ago, a young woman named Miriam was impregnated on that evening. The Ruach came upon her, and the conception was there. But it would be months before she would see the labor pains, and then the manifestation of that conception upon the earth. Here we're in the same thing. We have, as we're reading through Matthew chapter 24, studying these verses, we see that which is to be has already been conceived. And it's being played out in the birth pangs. They're coming. They're upon us, I believe, in this day. You look at Iran. What is so prophetic about Iran? Go read Ezekiel chapter 38, and where it says Persia, insert the word Iran, and that's how prophetic it is. Now, let's go to Matthew chapter 24, and we're going to start in, where are we here? Verse 9, I love this one. You know, I really don't. As much as I find verse 8 so intriguing, I find verse 9, one of those that you're going, okay, let's see. Because it says, at that time, you will be arrested and handed over to be punished and put to death, and all peoples will hate you because of me. You know, for us, especially for those of us living in Europe or most of the free world today, we read these verses and really do not understand what their meaning is. Now, if we were able to talk to a man named Niemöller or to his name in Germany, the pastors, many of the pastors that stood up against Hitler in the days of the Nazi regime. If we were to go to other countries where they are persecuted on a moment by moment basis, you know, these people would understand this verse. But the average person living today in the free world, like you and I, we really are having a hard time with this verse. At least I think we are, in that you will be hated and you will be betrayed and you will be arrested and you will be handed over to the authorities. For doing what? You know, for following Messiah? For pursuing his commandments? But you know, there is, it's an amazing thing that when you come to faith in Messiah, remember back to the days, those of you that came to faith and then later on this walk of Torah was revealed to you. You know, there were people that kind of shunned you in that day. Remember that? You know, the people you used to hang out with is in your youth or something, or somebody at your workplace, they found out that you're a believer, and, you know, they kind of kept their distance. And that's one thing. But this walk of Torah brings in a whole new area of it's unreal to me. I'll give you an example. You know, if you went to somebody's house and, you know, for dinner, right? And they serve something, they serve like anchovy pizza, right? And you said, hey, sorry, but I really don't eat anchovies. They'd go, okay, you know. Or if you went to their house and they serve something, rutabagas or turnip greens or whatever, you know, and you say, you know, I really don't like that, and I just really don't, you know, please excuse me for not eating. Okay, it's no big deal. But the moment that you say that you don't eat pork, you know, I sometimes wonder if in Genesis, was it really the serpent or did the enemy indwell a pig? You know, it's like there's something in the world that is of spiritual purity for the world regarding a pig. It's like something sacred to them. And when you and I say that we don't eat pork, it's like all of a sudden, every spirit, every religious spirit in the world kind of comes out of all of, what do you mean, legalistic and everything? It's just, it's crazy. Why? Because there's something about the commandments, okay? It's something about of pursuing and keeping these commandments that just drive religion and the world that is pursuing the enemy, it drives them nuts. And just brings up to it, and this is a perfect example right now, when you go in and somebody says Merry Christmas, and I know there's days that you just want to say, you know, you want to throw your hands up in the air, but you know, just thank you, and it's what I normally do and walk off. Once in a while, I'll say it depends on where I'm at. Okay, Sometimes I just, you know, you're in a line or you don't feel like it, whatever. Thank you. Move on. Other times, if I've got the opportunity, I'll say, well, thank you, but I don't observe Christmas. And just see what their reaction is. You know, it's a great opening. It's a great door to open. See if see what the reaction is on the other side. Some people are going to look at you like a cow looks at a new gate. Others are going to say, well, why not? You know, others, they don't really care, okay, because they don't get the meaning of anything anyway. But there's something about it when we go toward the commandments, and in the true last of the last days, you and I are going to begin to understand the spiritual aspects of keeping His commandments and how the commandments are that which brings the blessing, okay? And if there's one thing the enemy does not desire for us, is that we would walk in blessing. Because when we walk in blessing, then we are an effective witness of the power of the Almighty to other people. And we can then affect other people's lives. So just the fact that we would look at this and say, there's coming a time we're going to be arrested and hated by everyone. You could talk about this verse, I think, for days, but yet, until you live it, it's not going to be something that truly sinks in. But remember it, and this is not the first time. Remember back in Matthew chapter 10, I believe it is, Yeshua talked about this thing of the family betraying, one person betraying another. This happened in Nazi Germany. This has happened through the centuries. You study the life of Corrie Ten Boom. Who was it that betrayed her? It was a family friend. And so I think the message to us now in this day regarding this verse is you had better learn to be very discerning regarding who your friends are. We better be discerning of who our family truly is. You know, think back to yesterday, your yesterday, which is my tomorrow. Okay, think back to Thanksgiving, and maybe you got together with family, maybe you got together with friends. Think about it. If conversations came up, you know, let's say that you have a family like most of us do, that is not Torah pursuant. And think back to the conversations that went on when maybe someone said to you, oh yeah, you don't observe Christmas, or you don't observe Easter, or oh yeah, we had to change the stuffing recipe just for you. Think about it. Would that person defend you if it's the life or the well-being of their family? Would they defend you, or would they betray you? It's a question that today we can ask of those that we associate with, and I dare say it is a good time for us to know who our friends and who our, I won't say enemy is, but maybe who is it that's out there that we really don't know where they may stand? It's a good time to keep track of that. Now, let's go to, and let me insert in here, just because I can. Just because someone is observing Shabbat or not eating pork, or, you know, other things, that doesn't necessarily mean they're a friend. I dare say that there will be messianics, Hebrew roots, whatever you want to call, you know, whatever you want to call it. There will be even those in the end, because they've spent so much time studying the print on the page and not finding the Messiah in the page, that they can be part of what is going to be talked about in the next verses. And that is, when we go, at that time many will be trapped into betraying and hating each other. Okay, why? Why will they be trapped into betraying and hating each other? The answer is verse 5. Let's go back. Remember, this is not just, okay, this verse, then let's go to that verse. And no, the whole thing ties together. So the reason they will be trapped into hating and betraying is, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah, and will lead many astray. Now, these that are going to be led astray are those who are naming the name of the Messiah. But they are so involved in the religious practices that they don't have a relationship with who he truly is. And you know, this can be a little kind of a scary thing in a way. In a positive way, this can be a little unnerving. Because one of the things that you and I should be asking ourselves is, are we in the faith? Are we in Him, as we've talked about in previous weeks? You know, Shaul said, let a man work out his redemption, his salvation, with fear and trembling. Not that it's just some easy thing, but it's something that has to be worked out. And how do we work that out? I think probably for me, what I want to look at for myself, for my own family, is here's the standard. We can read the scriptures about who Yeshua is. Okay, we can read the Gospels. We can find Him in the Torah, can we not? He said in John, I believe it's chapter 8, He said to the Pharisees, if you believe Moses, you'd believe in Me. Because Moses wrote about Me. So He is in the words of Torah. And we can see what His life was in the words of Torah. We can see what His life was literally from cover to cover. And we have to ask ourselves, if I was to put my life and His life up here side by side, how similar would the practices of His life be to the practices of my life? Would my diet be the same? Would my vacation time, let's put it that way, my vacation time, not my holidays, okay? My festivals, would they be the same? Do you really think that Yeshua would be, you know, going to the Christmas tree and doing the Christmas presents? I don't think so. And so, you know, for the maybe one or two people that are still, you're still kind of in that section, you know, ask yourself, go ahead, you know, go ahead with your plans. Go ahead with your plans. But in the next month, you got about 30 days. Do a little bit of internet research, you know, that oxymoron. Once again, about the practices of Christmas. And then see how easy it is to kneel down at that tree. Ask yourself, would He be doing that? If our practices and His practices, if our lifestyle and His lifestyle are similar, and I'm not talking about wearing a robe or the length of your hair, all of those things. What is in the Torah is what He did. It's what He observed. It's what He practiced. That was His lifestyle, as we see that, as we've done through the book of Matthew. And so, are our lifestyles similar in loving one another? You know, if we've, He says, if you have hate in your heart toward your brother, do you think He did that? So it goes past just the outward appearance. And so if our life and His life are similar, then I think we're following the right Messiah. If they're not, then maybe there's some problems here that we need to address. And because those are the people that will be deceived. And you can be deceived with tzitzit on. You know, the people, the scribes and the Pharisees, they were standing there in the deception. All were wearing tzitzit. They all had beards. They had long hair and they had long robes. And they were not eating pork and shellfish. And they were going to synagogue on Shabbat. But their heart was far from him. They were not found, as Paul would say to the Philippians, in him. Let's go on. So at that time, many will be trapped into betraying and hating each other. Verse 11, many false prophets will appear and fool many people. How can they fool? How can a prophet, how can a false prophet, which is who is going to prophesy the word, okay, but he's a false prophet, and because he is using it for his own goals, his own desires, his own power over people, his own prosperity, they will fool many people. Why? How can this be so that they will fool people? Verse 5. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and will lead many astray. Well, let's go on. And many people's love will grow cold because of increased distance from Torah. I love the way that David Stern translated this one, and I believe it to be absolutely accurate. There will be a distancing from Torah. And as that distancing from Torah happens, the love of many will grow cold. Why? Verse 5. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and will lead many astray. There will be those who are allowing themselves to be distanced from Torah. How could this be? Anytime you have someone that says the Torah is done away with, that's distancing from Torah. Oh, well, we don't need to deal with those commandments. That's distancing from Torah. Well, you know, this is right now. It used to be wrong, but now it's right. That's distancing from Torah. It is the practice. The weekly, the monthly, the yearly practice of the Torah with Yeshua as the center of it. Not just studying the print on the page, but looking to the Messiah who is within the page. If there's ever two Torah portions that have Messiah all over it, it's last week and this week, the story about Joseph. He's everywhere in these Torah portions. And for someone to go through, and there will be, I can guarantee you, there was people last week, and there will be people this week in congregations, Messianic, Hebrew roots, whatever you want to call, congregations that will study these two Torah portions and never mention the Messiah. And they will end up following, if they don't get back on track, they will follow and be deceived. This distancing from Torah is what ties everything prior to this together. Let's go back to it. Many will come in my name, saying, I'm the Messiah, and will lead many astray. How do you keep from being led astray? The answer is Torah. You will hear of wars wars nearby and wars far off. Trying to do that in King James still. Why are there wars? Why is there any war on the face of the earth? Lack of Torah? Distancing? If the world would come back to Torah, which is not going to happen, okay? But if the world would come back to Torah, would come to Torah, come back is good because we'd be going back to the garden. There wouldn't be wars. There wouldn't be a rumor of war because Torah would be the standard for each other. People fighting against each other, nations fighting against each other. If people were living by the Torah, that wouldn't be happening. There would be no famine, earthquakes. I would even go so far to say that if there was an adherence to the Torah, that there would not be earthquakes. And how can that be? Because Torah is what holds everything together. You see this thing happen, and I was reading some stuff about it even last night, this morning, because this thing with Iran that is being portrayed, you know, and is a good thing, which it's bringing us closer to prophecy, okay? So I guess maybe it is a good thing. But you go back to the work of John McTiernan and Bill Koenig and various ones that have chronicled the things of when America has turned away from the commandments, what has happened? When America has turned against Israel, what has happened? Okay, what have they done when we've turned away from the Torah? Then these things happen. Torah is what, the confusion is out there. The confusion is like a tornado outside a door. The Torah is, the confusion is always there, but it's the Torah that keeps the door locked so the confusion can't come in. And the moment we turn against that, see, in our own home, if you're the one, the moment you bring that tree into your house, you have given an invitation for the enemy to bring chaos into our own lives. The moment that we, if I go out tomorrow and I decide that I'm going to have a ham sandwich, I'm not, but if I decide to have a ham sandwich, then I have given an invitation for sickness to come into my body. Torah teaches us responsibility, that what happens in our lives, whether we walk in blessing or we walk in curses, our responsibility, we've talked about this in months past, the world wants to say nobody's responsible for anything. Oh, it's, your mother did this, your father did this, your great uncle, the dog bit you, whatever. It's always somebody else's fault. Torah teaches us to take responsibility for our own actions. And this verse, to go back into it, now many translations will say, because iniquity will abound. Well, what is iniquity? I guess we'd have to define what iniquity is. Iniquity, if we define it by the laws of Oklahoma, or the laws of Cape Town, South Africa, or the laws of Seoul, South Korea, or do we define iniquity as what is in this book? Well, if this book is talking about something in this book, then this book is defining this book. And so iniquity is when we walk away from the Torah. Very easy. And it says in the end of this verse, but whoever holds out till the end will be delivered. Now, what will cause us to be able to hold out to the end? And there's two ends actually here, because some will be betrayed, they will be arrested, and they will be put to death, and they will have held out to their end. The other is holding out to the end, which is the return of the Messiah. And what is going to cause these people to hold out to either end? Back to verse 5. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and you, because of your observance of, because of your study of, because of your lifestyle of Torah. When someone comes and says, oh, he is the Messiah, here, put this ornament on the tree, you're going to say, that is what Paul was talking about, a different Messiah. I will not follow him. And because of that, because of our desire to follow the true Messiah, we will make it to the end. Now, I'm not going to get to the next verse this week. I'm going to hold off because I want to spend a lot of time in that verse. But what I do want to do is in this week, I want to read something that actually Daniel did. And it goes on this topic of he who endures to the end, he who stands firm to the end, will be saved, will be delivered, will be redeemed. Whatever word we want to put in there is the same thing. We're going to be with him. And it brings forth this this thought of the last man standing. Daniel, a few months ago, wrote one of his writings was called Last Man Standing. It's available on his website. But just with these verses that we've read this week, and regarding this verse specifically, but whoever holds out till the end will be delivered. I'd like to read for you this writing that Daniel did, because I think it's so appropriate. Not only is it appropriate in the verse that I just read, but it's also very appropriate in this time of Hanukkah. I think this writing, it really exemplifies all that Hanukkah is. And so I'll read this to you. This journey began with many faces, but slowly the masses have dwindled into the background, fading from the light. At first they were full of life and energy, bursting from the seams, holding back their existence. Everything seemed perfect. We all had a common goal and a drive to accomplish it. But the burdens of this road became too much for some, and idly they fell behind the rest, moving heavily as if a hand was pressing down upon them. The spiritual weak were the first to go. The darkness gathered them in with false hope of relief, and they were gone. Then went the tired. Their drowsiness caused them to believe that there would be rest in stopping, and they disappeared from our sight. Still, we carry them in our hearts. Now all that remain are the ones with eyes set on God. There are others with me, not many, but there is a remnant. I know not how long they will last. I can only hope and pray they will continue with me and not be tempted. As for me, I will do whatever it takes. I will climb every mountain, cross every ocean, and traverse every valley, if only to see your face for a mere moment. I will carry on with the promise of your grace in my heart. I will do what it takes, even if it means being the last man standing. That writing is what Hanukkah is all about. Now, you can allow someone to take it away from you. You can allow someone to, in their knee-jerk theological reactions, to say, no, we shouldn't do this. Or we can embrace this time of Hanukkah as a time of dedication. It is a time to dedicate ourselves truly to the Messiah. And God willing, Bezrat Hashem, if need be, make a determination to be the last man standing. Well, with that, I wish you a very blessed Hanukkah season. It would be just very rich for you, for each of you. That it would be a time of reflection, of really soul searching. I guess would be a better word for this than reflection, of soul searching. Let a man work out his own salvation with fear and trembling. Let's make it a time, another time during the year. You know, we talk about this at Passover. We talk about it at Yom Kippur, but I don't have a problem talking about it again. Hanukkah is another good time to do some real good life searching, so that we can be, if necessary, the last man standing. Shavuot Tov, Bezrat Hashem. See you again next week.
Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai Asem lecha shalom.